You're listening to City Views. I'm Jeff Robinson, in for Jennifer Napier-Pierce. The whole world is watching as the 2012 London Summer Olympic Games are now underway. And this year's Olympics have once again drawn attention to Utah, with Mitt Romney, president of the 2002 Winter Games here in Salt Lake City, drawing the ire of British citizens for criticizing the logistics of this year's games, leading Prime Minister David Cameron to refer to Salt Lake City as the, quote, middle of nowhere. Joining me now to discuss this and what lies ahead for this year's games is Joel Hammer, a correspondent for the BBC. And Joel, it's great to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And Joel, what was it that Mitt Romney said about the London Olympics that the people of Great Britain were offended by?
Well, I have to confess, I do feel a little bit on the unfortunate side for Mitt Romney. He didn't really say anything that wasn't particularly true. He was questioning the readiness of London. It was more about the timing. It's certainly fair to say, I think, that the majority of people in this country probably wouldn't necessarily know who Mitt Romney was. They certainly know who he is now. As I said, he questioned the readiness of the UK, and he had every right to. There was nothing short of a scandal about the lack of security at the Games just 10 days or so before the Games started. But I think because he was speaking pretty much on the eve of the Olympics, that people took exception to this. I think by that stage, even the most cynical citizen of Britain was ready to get behind the Games. And what we didn't really appreciate was someone coming and saying, actually, I don't think you're ready.
So it's kind of like this American outsider coming in, you know, who is he to question us and our preparation, that sort of thing?
Well, I do feel a bit sorry for Mitt Romney, not least because, as you say, he's got such expertise in this particular area. And I think if he'd have made those comments, say, 10 days before, I think a lot of people would have said, you know what, he's got a good point and we should be listening to him. I think it was just in the close proximity to the actual opening ceremony beginning of the events taking place that we thought we took some umbrage to, should we say.
And so, Joel, in the past couple of days since the opening ceremonies on Friday, how have the games been running logistically behind the scenes? Are you hearing of any major problems, or is it all smooth sailing so far?
Well, I think by and large, you have to say that the concerns before the Olympics on security that Mitt Romney was referring to and to traffic concerns have by and large not come to fruition, thankfully. Although there has been a problem with the seating, which perhaps hadn't been foreseen. A lot of empty seats in a lot of the big arenas for the big events. An investigation by the LOCOG, that's the organising committee of the London Games, at first thought there might be a lot of corporations, a lot of the big companies that use tickets for their customers, but that was pretty much ruled out. And in the end, the only problem seemed to be what's referred to as the Olympic family. So 5% of all the seating in all the arenas is set aside for athletes, for their coaches, and for officials from various federations. And it appears that they were off doing something else as opposed to sitting watching their competitors or fellow countrymen. But that appears to be resolved by and large. So hopefully we won't see the empty seats anymore.
This is City Views on KCBW. I'm speaking with Joel Hammer of the BBC about the 2012 Summer Games in London, which are now underway. Joel, what are the most anticipated events coming up later this week or later on in the Games that you're looking forward to covering there in London?
I think it's very difficult to look past the athletics, which starts at the weekend, and of course, very, very difficult to look past the 100-meter sprints with a man like Usain Bolt in the sport. It's very difficult not to get excited about that. I think if we were having this conversation and Usain Bolt was 100% fit, which he's not, which he's admitted himself, we'd probably be talking about whether he could break the world record, and instead of which, we're actually talking about whether he can retain his title, and I think that's going to be a huge event to watch. On a British point of view, and I think it's important that host nations gain success. I think it's good for the Games, whether you look at someone like Cathy Freeman in Australia. So Great Britain is pinning a lot of hopes on our 5,000 and 10,000 metre runner, Mo Farah. And I think the most of the country is very much looking forward to seeing whether he can win gold in not only one, but perhaps two events. No pressure there then.
And Joel, are there any particular countries that you have your eye on, that the world has its eye on when it comes to, you know, seeing how they perform in this particular games, whether it be China or whether it be another country there in Europe? Any particular interesting stories that you think we'll see, success stories or failure stories coming out of certain countries in these games?
Yeah, well, I always think it's the countries that we know least about. So I don't know if you watched the opening ceremony, the 205 nations strolled past each with their flag and their names emblazoned above them. And I don't know about you, but I was looking at half of them thinking they were probably made-up names. But the truth is that countries like Kazakhstan, for instance, already won two gold medals. Now, if we had been talking about the Olympics before it started, I would have probably taken quite a while to get down to Kazakhstan having two gold medals. So I think it's probably some of the smaller nations, some of the nations that don't have the infrastructure and the kind of supports that we're used to either here in Great Britain or where you are in the States to support and train and push their athletes through. So I always find that the countries, the really small countries, are the ones to look out for. So I wonder where Kazakhstan might finish in the medal table.
Mm-hmm. And Joel, you know, we talked about obscure countries. Are there any more obscure sports, perhaps, that you enjoy covering? Certainly on television here in the United States, we're obsessed with gymnastics. Everybody loves watching gymnastics. But are there any particular sports that perhaps we're not going to see on NBC over here in America that, you know, people are, that still draw great interest there at the games?
Yeah, I think this is the beauty of the Olympic Games, and particularly for spectators. You get the chance to see sports that you wouldn't otherwise go and watch, perhaps you know nothing about. And of course, you're seeing the very best of that sport taking part. If I were you, I'd try and seek out handball. Now, it's not a sport that's played in this country, but it's been described to me as like basketball without rules. a cross between soccer and basketball, seven aside. It's hectic, it's physical, it's very quick. There's lots of goals. It's played mainly by sort of Eastern Europeans and Central Europeans. As I say, not played in this country at all. But I caught a little bit of it on the telly yesterday, and I was enthralled. So see if you can't seek out some handball.
All right, we've been speaking with Joel Hammer. He is a correspondent with the BBC about the 2012 Summer Games now in London. Joel, thank you very much for your time and sharing your expertise here on City Views. We appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
This is City Views here on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson, and we're going to conclude today's program with a feature from our friends over at the BBC on fencing in this year's Olympic Games. And here is that story.
Your BBC Guide to Fencing, a London 2012 sport.
Fencing is rare among Olympic sports. It was part of the first modern Olympics in Athens in 1896 and has remained on the programme ever since. A true echo of thousands of years of sword fighting, fencing as a sport took shape in the 19th century. In those first Olympics, there were two weapons, the épée and the sabre. Now there are three, with the foil added to the programme in 1924. So there are six individual events as men and women compete with each of the three swords, and there are four team competitions too, making 10 gold medals to be fought for in total. There are subtle differences between the three weapons. The foil is the lightest of the three. You can only score by touching the tip of your sword on your opponent's torso. The sabre is heavier, and fencers usually score hits with the edge of the weapon, aiming for anywhere above the opponent's waist. And the épée is the heaviest of the three, where the whole of your opponent's body is the target. These days, hits are recorded using wireless technology. As home of the Musketeers, it's perhaps fitting that France have won more medals in the sport than any other country, and they took home two golds from Beijing. But the Italians have won more gold, and Valentina Vezzali made history 4 years ago by winning the individual foil for the third time running.
Your BBC Guide to Fencing, a London 2012 sport.